Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk to our wonderful Dennis Stewart. We missed you last week, Dennis.
You did, but I was attending to more important things. I actually went to Sydney to attend my grandson's baptism. So first things first.
First things first. Family first. Family first all the time. Now, Dennis, a few weeks ago you started to say more about the remarkable but largely ignored medical properties of cabbage. Time curtailed that. Today you want to talk about using cabbage and its allies to help treat ailments when used as a food or a juice. And you particularly want to mention the findings that when cooked properly or juiced and eaten regularly, it can help fight some cancer.
Now,
how good's that?
They're radical statements, but every one of those statements can be validated by modern credible medical or other allied healthcare information, because this is at times a pretty controversial topic, but everything I say I make sure can be backed up. By the way, I'm glad you used the term allies of cabbage, because cabbage belongs to what's called the cruciferae family. So a lot of its properties are also shared by things like Brussels sprouts, cauliflower and kale. They all belong to the cruciferae family, which is derived from the actual shape of the flower of the plants, and they all therefore share pretty well the same properties, albeit arguably cabbage is the best documented, and from cabbage the other derivatives or the other allies were developed. So a whole family is very useful. Cabbage, or Brassica oleracea, you impress people, particularly the academics,
when you can
use the technical language. But no, cabbage is the leader of the pack, and we looked and have looked for a week or two at its remarkable topical applications. And I'd like to say more, but time won't allow me to do so. But I will mention, again, references for people that are interested, and that has been stacks of people have been interested in this topic, and you will say something about the references that I have been using at the end of the program.
I shall.
That's right. But what I want to do today is move beyond a topical use and look at the history and reasonably modern medical use of it as an oral preparation, that is a juice or a food, to treat some particularly nasty conditions, particularly of the gut, ulceration of the stomach, and also as a useful agent in addressing the problem of ulcerative colitis.
Wow.
And then we'll look at the most controversial topic, and we won't be able to get through it all today, but I'd like to get through it sometime. I'll look at the remarkable information available from some of the references that I use and refer to that see the eating, the regular use of eating cabbage or using it as a juice, particularly blended with carrot juice, makes it a very useful device to fight against, particularly two of the most common cancers, particularly cancer of the breast and also cancer of the prostate.
Okay. Well, just a side question from me. You were just saying that the cabbage is part of cauliflower family, etc. Some of those veggies, can you use those to sort of help things, or do you have to have cabbage? What if you don't like cabbage?
No, look, the cabbage is the best representative.
Right.
And remember, we're talking about the leaves of the cabbage. And it was interesting in one of the texts that I mentioned this morning that the emphasis again is on the dark outer leaves of the cabbage or its allies, any of them, cauliflower or any of them, their leaves share the same characteristics. But the ideal situation is to try to get hold of organically grown members of that family, particularly if you're going to use it along medical lines. Ideally getting a cabbage that is devoid of contact with pesticides or things like that is the best way of harnessing its properties without perhaps compromising, too much, particularly if you actually clean the outer leaves and are aware of that factor. Shop around. We've got good outlets now that do stock organically grown vegetables, and particularly with the Brassica family, it's worthwhile seeking the organic vegetables if you can get it.
Have a chat to Libby from Mayfield East. Hi, Libby. You've got an issue with hives?
Yes. How are you? I do, and I've had them for several weeks now. The doctor's just suggested antihistamines regularly, as up to four times a day. So they're not sort of going.
Okay. Do you regularly get them, Libby, or is this just an episode?
No, this is a significant episode.
Are you prone to them? Have you had these before?
I have had hives before, but not like this. They okay. usually last a couple of days and they're gone.
Okay.
This has been weeks.
I would suggest, and the use of the antihistamine, I understand, and that's fine. I've got no problem with that. But if it is resisting what you're presently doing from your good doctor, I suggest you just note two things that might be of use. Now, you need to be able to access a pharmacist who uses homeopathics, and there is one pharmacist in Hamilton that does very successfully. The homeopathic preparation generally helps this condition, particularly in aborting an episode. Your condition is sometimes referred to as urticaria, and the reason it's called urticaria is that the hive is very similar to a rash that one gets when one comes in contact with urtica, the herb. Urtica is stinging nettle. So homeopathic medication, paradoxically, based on urtica or stinging nettle, is frequently very useful in aborting hives. That is a condition similar to that which is caused by, say, urtica. So an urtica preparation in homeopathic form, say in what's called a 6C potency, you could write that down as 6C potency, sometimes a lower potency, i.e. 6X. I won't get into the drama or the technicality of explaining homeopathic potencies, but they are low potencies, which are more applicable to an acute condition such as this. Either one of those, or in fact each one of them given an opportunity to assert itself, would be a useful starting base, in my opinion, to address this unresolving condition of urticaria. And you can get that in pillule form or in drop form. The pharmacist that you know of, and whom I have great regard for, he and his team down at Hamilton, they will know exactly how to prescribe it for you. Now, the other thing is, there is a bioflavonoid. A bioflavonoid is something that is extracted from fruits and herbs and flowers, etc. And one of them is called quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. Quercetin forms a very useful nutritional approach to building up resistance to allergies, but also assisting in aborting an episode. You might mention that to the team, because a quercetin, either on its own or with similar remedies, would be a useful nutritional approach to reinforce the homeopathic.
And is that through a fruit or something like that?
No, bioflavonoid would come as a tablet and is very economical. Neither of those preparations are very expensive. You should mention it to your doctor. I'm sure he won't complain, particularly if the treatment's not resolving itself. A step up from an antihistamine might be a considerably stronger medication, which you should arguably try to resist, and the use of the homeopathic preparation reinforced by the bioflavonoid should be given an opportunity to see if it can hasten the resolution of the problem.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your information.
Give my regards to the team at Hamilton, whom I know very well.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Libby. Thanks for your call. Okay, next on the line we have Daryl from Bolton Point. Hi, Daryl. Thanks for holding. Do you want to talk about medical marijuana?
Yes. It's just a funny thing that I've noticed that, like, I'm 56. I turned 56 the other day, and I've got friends that are, like, 10 years older than me, and they're on so much medication that the doctors have and they're starting to try to drop down on their medications from doctors and go naturally with marijuana. Is that a thing or not?
I'd be very cautious of that. Let me just say that I'm a proponent, actually, and have been during my whole career, of a medical application of marijuana. But you'll notice what I've said there, a medical application. And that is where the herb in a pharmaceutical form is prescribed for a particular problem or set of problems. Marijuana is not the answer to all health conditions.
THC?
I'm not going to go into the details because this is something that needs to be discussed, first of all, with those.
I'm worried about my older friends that are going this way.
Well, they would have to be very cautious because I would hate to think that they are trying to go that way, getting rid of some of the medications that might in fact be necessary for them. For instance,
they're getting old and getting sick of the medication.
Yeah, but sometimes medication is necessary.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Not always. I have the viewpoint that that Australians are over-medicated, but that's a pretty strong claim to make. I've got many, many friends in the medical profession and I respect them greatly. And
And
at the end of the day, they would make a decision. But I myself, I have helped a grazier from around the Tamworth area who had had a particular operation, very rare operation, the removal of a pheochromocytoma, which is a benign lesion on the adrenal gland. And he was operated on in the old-fashioned way, which involved massive surgery. My wife was one of the few people. It's a very, very rare tumour, but it can be quite deadly because it pushes the blood pressure through the roof. But the old-fashioned way was to do a big surgical procedure. Now, it got rid of the pheochromocytoma in the case of the gentleman, but he was left with incredible pain, particularly of the peripheries, and his life was a misery. He was introduced to medical marijuana, but being a very conservative man, whom I respect, I respect the conservative people. I'm a little bit that way myself, particularly as I get older. And I suggested that he discuss the possibilities of using medical marijuana as a means of lessening his dependence on some of the stronger medication he was taking.
That's what my friends are trying to do.
But you notice I have said there.
You did.
So anything like this needs to be, let me emphasise, medically assessed. Medically determined, because the use of this herb in any form can be something that can interact with other medication.
Yeah.
And it should not, in my opinion, be used by people that have no understanding of its chemistry, how it works and what it is used for. There's a bit of a, how can I call it, a tsunami happening with reference to marijuana, medical marijuana.
I think so too, mate, yeah.
So everything has its day. I would like to see its use come into play more, but under guided medical application and prescription.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for your call, Daryl. We really appreciate it. Now, Dennis, we've been talking about cabbage. Mm. When taken regularly, cabbage juice may be helpful in healing stomach or bowel ulcers. How does that work?
Well, the interesting thing about cabbage is that it is a mine of chemical constituents. In the book by Gingras and Bellevue, Foods That Fight Cancer, on page 53 of that text, there's an excellent discussion on what's called the phytochemical compounds in cabbage. And they make the statement that the spectacular decrease in the risk of developing different cancers seen in individuals with a diet rich in cruciferous vegetables suggests that these foods are an important source of phytochemical compounds. Now, what are they saying? They're saying that in their assessment of people with cancer or the reduction of cancer activity as a result of using vegetables, cancer can be seen and other conditions can be seen to be responsive to the unique so-called phytochemical compounds in this particular medicinal food, if we call it that. So cabbage is not only a useful nutritional agent, which it certainly is, but it is a powerful mine, if you like, of chemical constituents which have multiple characteristics, including some natural antibiotic properties and some anti-ulcer properties. And those anti-ulcer properties are based on particularly the presence in the cabbage of a substance known as vitamin U. That's the crude colloquial term used to that particular compound in the cabbage that has been shown to have anti-ulcerous capacity. And this is not something new. One of the textbooks that I used probably 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, in teaching my students the use of herbs in managing gastrointestinal diseases, the text, this medical text, dealing with ulcers and other things, specifically mentioned the validity of cabbage juice as a great agent to participate in healing, particularly ulcers of the stomach and of the bowel. And a lot of this was put down to this recognition of this unique principle in it called vitamin U, and that is only one of the principles in it. That, together with what's called mucilage, is also an explanation of what the herb does when taken regularly. You notice I use the term herb there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, it is a herb, Brassica oleracea. Cabbage is a herb. It's a vegetable. Call it what you like. But the chemistry of it indicates that its use, particularly in stubborn ulcers or recurring ulcers, is nothing mystical. It's in the literature. It's just that, like so many natural cures, and I'm sad to say this, like so many natural cures which have been documented from a medical perspective, they are still not being utilised or taken seriously, or as far as I'm aware, not taught in medical schools. Now, that is disappointing, because anyone who practices medicine will know that there are some conditions which are defiant to the modern medical approach. Look at, for instance, the condition of, say, a peptic ulcer or a stomach ulcer. It has shown some useful response to the prescribing of a group of antibiotics, and that has helped many, many people. But I have had many, and I say many, people coming to see me whose gastric problem, their inflammation of the stomach, ulceration of the stomach, has been stubborn and resistant even to multiple prescriptions of that treatment. And I'm not knocking that treatment. It's a great treatment. But here, here is a case where the sensible application or the taking of something very simple, the cabbage juice blended perhaps with some carrot juice to make it a bit more palatable, taken regularly, can see some reduction in the inflammatory and ulcerative activity. And that is because amongst those chemical constituents in cabbage are some antibiotic principles. And we suspect that the long history of the benefit of cabbage, particularly in upper gut ulceration, may be because of the way in which it has some antibiotic principles which are effective in negating the Helicobacter and leading to a healing of the gut wall. Mm. Now, also in the cases of, say, ulcerative colitis, that's a nasty condition, and fortunately it's well managed, albeit it is stubborn and can still lead to very serious colon surgery where it's resistant. Here again, the ongoing regular use of cabbage juice, and again blended with carrot juice to make it a little bit more palatable, taken seriously as a medicine ongoingly, can lead to a healing of the bowel wall and certainly participate potentially in lessening the bleeding process, which then lessens the patient's need to have to think of more steroid treatment or immunosuppressant therapy. Now, I ask myself the question continually when I'm confronted with this sort of problem, look, why isn't this information at least taken a bit more seriously and offered as a possibility two patients that have stubborn upper gut and lower gut ulcerative or inflammatory conditions, bleeding conditions, why aren't they offered to them under medical supervision with an understanding of how to do it? I'm just raising the possibility today because one of the things that I am confronted with and have been confronted with my over 50 years of being in practice is a complete ignorance of the potential of natural substances to participate in pretty serious disease conditions. And if I can help someone by suggesting that the sensible ongoing use of cabbage juice can have an effect on lessening their peptic ulcer or lessening the inflammation and even bleeding of a colon ulcer, I reckon I'd be pretty pleased about that.
Yeah.
And I say it to provoke people that might otherwise think that, you know, I'm crazy, that this stuff is well documented.
And we have Narell from Cessnock on the line. Hi, Narell. You want to talk about nausea and heartburn?
Yes. So I've had heartburn, reflex, gourd for the last, about 20 years.
Yes.
But now I seem to be getting nausea with it. And I was wondering how I can fix that.
Okay. Narell, you've run this advancement on your condition past your doctor, have you, the nausea?
Yes. Okay. So I'm on Rapprazole for it.
Yeah.
But, yes, the nausea, basically I've been told, well, it's just part of the deal. But I'm sure there must be something I could take to alleviate it when it comes along.
Is it only episodic or is the nausea with you all the time?
No, it's only episodic.
Okay. Look, I would I'd try to address it from the point of view of giving you or recommending something simple that might lessen the actual tendency for the nausea. And I immediately think of a couple of herbs that I've taught and lectured on and have recommended and prescribed. One of the herbs that is very useful for upper gut conditions, including, by the way, the reflux condition, but if you're doing well on Nexium, that's fine. But the herb meadowsweet is it's a very safe, very economical herb, and in my opinion, best taken as a simple tea.
Oh, okay.
Meadowsweet tea is an English herb, made famous by English herbalists. William Smith was a great English herbalist whose writings I've studied and lectured on all my life, and he had a great affinity and affection for meadowsweet, and I've proved it during my prescribing that it works as a useful adjunct to other therapy that might be being used to address heartburn, as it used to be called. Now, you should be able to get hold of some meadowsweet tea from up at the clinic there. Sally Bowen's clinic would stock it in Cessnock. Tea is the preferable thing. Making a tea of it, a teaspoonful of the herb, cup of boiling water, let it obviously cool, filter it through an old-fashioned tea strainer, and take a couple of cups of meadowsweet tea a day, even ongoingly. I think you would find that would have some benefit in this nausea that you're experiencing. And it would not clash, let me emphasise, as far as I'm aware, it would not clash with what you're presently taking from your good doctor for the primary medication that you're taking.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
No problems. Bye. We've got Marion from Carey Bay on the line. Hi, Marion.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. You want to talk about peripheral neuropathy?
Yes, please. And the medication.
Marion, how long have you been struggling with this condition?
It's probably just on 2 years now, and I think it's from long COVID.
Oh, okay.
But I'm on pre-jab, and I just don't like the side effects. I've put on a lot of weight, it seems to have made me more anxious.
Are you getting some relief from what you're using?
I am getting a bit of relief here, the tingling and the nerve endings, but I don't like the pregabalin.
Okay. Look, it is not an easy condition to treat, so anything that I would say would be very tentative. For neuropathy, it's not uncommon to use preparations that incorporate topical applications I'm talking about that incorporate capsicum, and something like Zostrix from the pharmacist is a useful remedy for dealing with neurological pain. Now, it is used topically. Your pharmacist would advise you on whether you need the high-potency one or the standard medication, but it is very popularly used for dealing with trigeminal neuralgia and with other neurological painful conditions. It's a topical application. So
how do you spell it, Dennis?
Z-O-S-T-R-I-S, Zostrix. It's a well-known pharmaceutical, two strengths. Have a word with your pharmacy about that.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks very much, Marion. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Next, we've got John from Adamstown. Hi, John. You want to talk about herbs on food?
Yes. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. I just wanted to ask you, you know, you can buy shakers with ground-up herbs.
Correct.
I'm just looking. I have one in my hand at the moment.
Yes.
Now, it contains marjoram, basil, capsicum, rosemary, oregano. I just wondered, could it be beneficial to sprinkle these on your food?
I think that the application of herbs to food generally is one of the best things that we can do.
I just wondered. I just bought some in the shop recently.
Well, that sounds to me to be a very nice blend of flavoursome herbs, which are particularly used in the preparation or the taking of a meal. And I commend you for starting to use some herbs even on your food. And I recommend to all listeners
I'm a regular listener to your program.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that. You're in Adamstown. I was born and raised in Adamstown, a good old town. So see how you go with that. I'm pleased you rang in. And
thank you very much, Dennis.
Okay, thank you, John.
Bye.
Thank you, bye. Now, Dennis, we want to wrap up this topic, and you were talking about cabbage juice, and to be honest, it sounds disgusting.
it isn't really. Everyone's taste is different.
Well, how do you make it taste good?
Okay. Look, the general recommendation is, at least until you've broken yourself into taking it straight, is to use it 50-50 with carrot juice.
Okay.
Now, interestingly, carrot juice shares many of the possibilities of cabbage juice. So it's a nice combination. But if you were to take it in that form, to get any benefit from it regularly, you'd have to take it regularly, and you would ideally have to take both of the foods in their uncooked form, obviously, and ideally if you can get them organically. But the ongoing daily use of that blend would convey a lot of benefits to the upper gut and the lower gut. And, you know, one or two cups of that blend of juices per day, ongoingly, in my opinion, is worthwhile trying to quieten down some of these conditions that we've spoken about today.
Okay. Well, one outstanding potential benefit is the use of cabbage or its allies, like kale, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, as a potential cancer-fighting agent. Can you elaborate on this a little bit more?
Oh, look, I'd like to talk about this all day. But essentially, cabbage has been put at the top of the list, particularly in Gingras and Bellevue's book on foods that fight cancer, as being the most useful of all foods to build up prophylaxis against cancer generally, but particularly cancer of the breast and cancer of the bladder. But generally, all cancers have been shown by these two French scientists in this wonderful book to be remarkably useful in responding to the application of cabbage. And cabbage has got a lot of chemical constituents that explain why this would be so. It has been shown, for instance, that Japanese women who eat disproportionately a large amount of cabbage ongoingly in their diet have much, much less cancer of the breast than Western women. And it's statistically been shown that similarly with cancer of the bladder, the regular use of cabbage, taken seriously, by the way, not just ad hoc and on occasionally, but taken seriously, has statistically shown the ability to reduce bladder cancer, particularly in males. Now, there's a lot more on this I'd like to talk more about it, but we've exhausted the topic of cabbage.
Well, I just want to ask, when you're saying taken seriously, yeah. how much are we talking per week?
Well, if you were doing it, you'd be taking, basically on a daily basis, you would be taking a glass or two of cabbage juice or, say, a couple of glasses of the blend, and that's a pretty low dose. I suggest that if people are interested, they should get hold of the books that we've been mentioning, particularly
yes.
for this topic.
Well, we're going to be talking about the books. We're going to get a list from you of all the books over the coming weeks,
yes.
and we'll get them up on our website.
And that information then will convey to people some of the subtleties associated with using this knowledge in a way that's measured and can be monitored.
Right.
So it's been a good topic
to
talk about.
It has been a good topic. It's yeah. it's very, very interesting. And so you were saying before that with cabbage, it's better not to boil it?
I think this goes for most vegetables, by the way. But cabbage in particular is largely destroyed if you boil it. And as a kid, all the cabbage we ate, reluctantly, was boiled to death, as was the habit in a town like this. It's no good. It loses everything. If you want to prepare it, use it ideally as a juice, eat it raw, or steam it. But the less heat you apply, the more you maintain the stability of the chemistry in it. Because listeners should take away what we've been saying today. This is a food with a mine of medicinal possibilities due to the unique multi-phytochemicals, and they're destroyed if you boil up the vegetable.
Okay, and as far as juicing it, it's not like an orange. just
no,
get
a juice extractor. There's cheap as dirt.
Okay.
If you're going to take your health seriously, everyone must have a juice extractor.
Looks like I better go shopping.
And grow your own cabbages. They're easily grown.
Yeah, and if you don't know how to grow your cabbages, you're just going to have to ring Judy Sharp on a Monday for Gardening
Talk
Back.
Well, there you go. That was a nice
it was. Did you like that?
Conclusion. That was beautiful.
That was great. Now, and quickly, just because, I've got 30 seconds left, so I just want to ask about the cauliflower as well. You can eat that raw, that's fine. And that will that have a benefit
as well? The leaves on the cauliflower share similarities to those found in the cabbage. They belong to the cruciferae family. Remember that.
Cruciferae.
Kale, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower all belong to the one family. But cabbage is the original.
Okay, all right.
There we go. A lot of cabbage will be sold in Newcastle
That's
today.
That's right. Look out at the supermarket. Make sure you stock up on cabbage. Thanks very much, Dennis. Catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.